Welcome to episode 14 of the Bounce Back Bogey podcast. As usual, I'm joined by Craig Titterington and Braden Brown. We just came off the best week of the year, being Masters Week. Unfortunately, we are now 358 days away from the next Masters. It seems like there's so much anticipation for this week, and then it's gone so fast. Craig, Bray, how much golf did you watch this weekend?
Oh, yeah, I'll go. I watched a lot. Besides Thursday, I didn't get to watch much Thursday. Luckily, I got to watch all of Friday, and that was one of the most enjoyable major rounds I've watched in a long time because everyone loves seeing carnage.
Yeah.
And fuck, was there carnage. Like, holy shit, the wind was going, the greens were firm. Guys were just getting bent over by Augusta all Friday, so that was great to watch.
Yeah.
And then shout out to my roommate who set up an awesome patio in our yard. So we got TV out there, couches out there, and just an awesome setup. So I just parked myself on the couch outside and watched on a nice sunny day with a couple white foxes in. And yeah, it was awesome. And then Sunday today was, yeah, it was kind of disappointing. Obviously, we'll get into that. But
yeah,
Scotty's him.
Bray, how much golf did you watch?
Well, Craig was the most dialed in anybody could be, apparently, according to
some Snapchats.
Yeah, the most dialed anybody could ever be was Craig Titterington, even though Scotty on the back nine today seemed to be just as dialed in as Craig was on his couch. But yeah, I watched basically as much golf as I possibly could on Thursday and Friday. I do work. I work from home, but I do work, so kind of watched on my phone on the side, but watched as much as I could. But pretty much watched all day Saturday and then all day Sunday. And yeah, as Craig mentioned, Friday was phenomenal, like carnage galore, probably the hardest I remember Augusta National playing. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it has played harder, but just in recent years it hasn't. And that was phenomenal. I thought Saturday was also phenomenal, and for a good stretch of this morning it was great too, until the back nine. I will get into the specifics, but until the back nine this afternoon, it was a great treat. And then Scotty ran away with it, so good for him. But yeah, some good viewing.
Yeah, it was. I tried my best not to look at my phone and watch highlights while I was at work, because I worked pretty much every day during Thursday through Sunday. And I rewatched the rounds when they're replaying them on TSN, and it just seemed like it had the makings of being like one of the better Masters in a really, really long time. And we'll get into it, but I was also a little bit disappointed in how things kind of turned out today. But with that said, I think we should start with Scotty today. We talked about how if he had won last week, he might feel a little bit more pressure coming into Augusta. He came second, and he still won this week. So he's not quite as hot as Nelly, who won four events in a row, but he went first, second, first. And he is on we say it every week, it seems like. He's on a different level than everybody else. Like, it's not even close right now. Bray, what do you think of Scotty's play?
Yeah, I think he didn't even show his A game until about hole eight. Eight, nine, 10, he birdied. Or sorry, was it 8, 9, 10? Or was it 9, 10, 11? I don't know. No, 8, 9, 10. Sorry, 8, 9, 10. Yeah, 8, 9, 10. He bogeyed 11. But like from hole 8 on, he showed his A game. Yeah. And it just shows how high his floor was, because he was going through. I mean, Thursday was his A game as well. He shot a clinical bogey-free 66, just dialed in.
Yeah.
But Friday, obviously conditions. Saturday, tough conditions. And then the first couple holes today just didn't really have it. And but that just shows how high his floor was. He was leading when he was, I would say, his like C yeah. minus game, kind of like tee to green. Usually you just see him dominate tee to green. Obviously we know he's a great chipper and a below average putter, although that's kind of changing with the mallet. But it just shows that he's right there when he's just playing very average golf. And then when he dials it in on the back nine here, it just shows that he can separate from everybody.
Yeah. I don't have the stats in front of me, but Brandel was saying that his strokes gain approach to green this week was actually like fairly mid pack this week. And he's still, I mean, what did he win by? He won by four still. That just shows exactly like what you said. He just has such a higher floor than everybody because, and I was talking to this with a buddy, his A game is crazy because he's the best player tee to green, but he's also like a top 10 scrambler as well, even with bad putting. His short game is phenomenal, which is not typically what you see with a ball striker that is that good. So when he's missing greens, he's still getting up and down on the par fives. He's still getting up and down for par on the par fours. So he's never really making mistakes. And we've seen that because he's still in the 2024 season. He's still without a round over par. So
up until he has to putt, like he just never looks like he's going to make a mistake because he'll drive it in the trees and he'll like just smart punch out and then he wedges it to a foot. And he makes par. So it's like, it's so clinical. And at worst, he makes a bogey. And like the only question mark each week is, okay, is he going to putt good or not? And if he doesn't, it's okay. Now it's going to be close. And then I was screaming at my TV on the back nine, like legitimately screaming, miss a fucking shot. Cause I wanted a glimpse of hope and like for it to be close. Cause we thought that back nine was going to be electric.
Go ahead, Bray.
Back nine, Ludwig, like Chundi's into the water on 11. Colin, water on 11. Max kind of got unlucky on 12. Like he didn't hit the worst shot, but like kind of got the back slope just past the green and it kicked into the bushes, had to take a drop, whatever. Makes double. So three guys that were within, like that were really threatening, they all kind of threw up on themselves. And then Scotty on 11 just hits it short right. What you need to do, doesn't get that one up and down, but that's like you take bogey there, you don't make double. And then hits the smart shot on 12 that you need to do, makes birdie on 13 that you need to do, just hits the golf shots that you need to hit to close out a major when you're leading.
Yeah. So I'm not putting him near peak Tiger in terms of how much he's dominating right now, but I feel like this is the second best peak we've seen in a really long time. Guys like DJ had a pretty good peak for a while. Koepka obviously in the majors had a good peak.
Rory
had a good peak. Even Spieth for a little bit was on fire. Mm-hmm. Yep. But what Scotty's doing where he is the favorite to win every week and he just keeps winning and winning and winning, I really do feel like this is the closest we've seen to somebody be. Obviously, Tiger's dominance was way longer, and I'm not comparing the two, but this short span that he's on, I think it's fair to say that we haven't seen dominance like this in a long time.
This could be a generational season.
Yeah.
Like he won the first major, and it's like not crazy to think he might like have a good chance at the Grand Slam.
Yeah. The most sustainable, because he, like we just said, he stripes it better than everyone. And then his short game is phenomenal. Like putting's the one thing that's like whatever, but he has the most sustainable game out of anyone. So talking about Grand Slam, what would you put the over under at majors on the year? Is it crazy to say the line's 2.5?
So I was going to say 2.5. I think 1.5 is minus odds for sure.
Yeah.
And I think the number that he's going to hit is 2. Yeah. So I think, and still that's a phenomenal year, but the one that I'm expecting him to win or maybe win both are the PGA and the US Open. Cause he's just going to hit it better than everyone.
Yeah. That's a good take. And then on the links style, it's kind of more random, I guess.
Yeah, more random and a style of golf that he's not particularly used to, but like the hard, firm, fast stuff where he can just ball strike his way around better than everybody. I'm expecting him to play extremely well at those.
Do you know what I think was kind of this might be a stupid take, but I kind of think was an underrated shot today, and it got my hopes up for a little bit, was Max on 11. His second shot
was
so good after like multiple people dumping it in the water. Scotty obviously ended up hitting his short right, but Max's was so perfect, and they stood over it for a while and were like really like contemplating the win. He just nutted up and flushed it.
Yeah.
But obviously it didn't matter at all, but sick shot.
So I have an interesting question that might be really stupid. So hole 12 is what, 150 yards? Maybe a little less. These guys make that hole look so difficult. And I'm trying to figure out if it's like just people that talk about it constantly about how difficult it is and how swirly the wind is. Are they like getting in their heads a little bit about how difficult it is, or is the wind actually moving that much? Because these guys are clinical from 150 yards. And what did we say yesterday? 50% of people are hitting the green?
Yeah, that was just a ballpark guess. But yesterday and Friday, the wind was crazy. So even if it wasn't swirling, just the sheer like force of the wind was enough to be hard. But like today, it wasn't that windy at all.
No.
But the problem there is that if it's blowing one direction, it'll hit those trees. You got it as your background there.
Yeah.
It'll hit those trees and then swirl back in their face sometimes. And it's really random. It's certainly, I'm sure it's more of a mental thing. Like you just got to commit to hitting that shot just over the bunker.
Yeah.
The problem is hitting that shot, if you pull it a little bit, which is like the safer miss, you're long like Max was.
You do what Max did, exactly.
And if you flare it, you're fucked.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's it takes just like a 4 or 5 yard pull with how shallow that green is for it to bounce. And unfortunately, Max is bounced into the bushes and not into the bunker. But
yeah. And how many balls yesterday did we see land long and then come back, and Max got the reverse? Like he landed not that far over the green and it got stuck up there, which is just super, super unlucky, but part of the game. But that's why lefties have had success there, because when you take the same aim and the lefty gets that slight pull, it's on the back right portion of the green. You get that slight flare as a lefty and it's on the front left. So it is an advantage as a lefty on that hole specifically.
One thing I thought was cool is like Tiger is notorious for playing 12 very smart and like always being able to hit the middle of the green. Then Scotty does exactly that.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, as soon as he did that, it was like, this guy's.
That was the last real hope. Like when Spieth and in the Willett year, when Spieth just chundied on himself.
Yeah.
On that hole.
Yeah.
That was the last real hope when he hit it there. And then when he like made par there, and then when he birdied 13, it was over. And birdied 14, stuck it to a foot. So clinical Tiger-esque stuff from Mr. Scotty Scheffler to close it out today.
Yeah, it was incredible. I wanted to ask you guys, so at one point at the front nine, while I was just kind of watching on my phone, I think all four guys, Scheffler, Hovland, Homa, and...
Not Hovland.
Morikawa.
Yeah.
Aberg, Scheffler, and Homa. We're all tied at 6 under. And I think that was on like, I'm going to say,
like somewhere, six, seven.
Somewhere near like closing in on the front nine.
Yep.
And then I stopped watching. And then all of a sudden those guys started chundying on themselves. And I looked up and Scotty had a 3-shot lead. And it was so fast, the change that happened just through those, like that little stretch on 9, 10, 11. But as you were watching with all those guys tied at 6 under, who were you pulling for? Like, who did you want to see win?
So Max. I wanted Scotty.
Yeah.
And that's not the popular pick. Like most people don't want Scotty. He's kind of boring, whatever. I wanted Scotty. I just really wanted it to be close. I just wanted 18 to matter and hopefully playoff. So I wanted Scotty, but if it wasn't going to be Scotty, I wanted to see Max Homa win. He's like the nicest guy ever, goes on podcasts, has a good time, goes on YouTube videos with like YouTube golf stuff. And Just seems like the most genuine, nice guy out there. But also Ludvig is an up and coming star. So it would have been fun to see him in his first Masters, first major, actually. So to see him win would have been really cool. But I ultimately wanted to see Scotty just to see him validate how well he's playing, because if he didn't win this Masters,
yeah,
he'd only have one major. And that's just like so underachieving for how well he's played over the last year, year and a half here. Totally. So I was pulling for Scotty, but what about you guys?
The only reason I was pulling for Scotty is because, like we said, I think he can have a generational year. So you can't win them all if you don't win the first. So that was kind of the thing, was it was like, okay, let's see him go on this tear. So I don't know. I kind of wanted to see him, but I feel like Max is just hits it so good. And like, he's eventually going to win one. He doesn't do anything bad either. He's just not as good as Scotty. Mm-hmm. And it's so no one can touch him when he's good, obviously. So yeah, I was rooting for Max still. That was the guy I wanted to win. I don't care about Oberg.
I agree with your takes, but I actually was pulling for Ludvig a lot.
I
love the guy. I love his swing. I love his attitude. He just looks like he's enjoying himself on the course, high-fiving patrons, like had a snack knocked out of his hand on one of the holes. Just kind of laughed it off.
That was sick.
His swing is robotic.
For a loop. He's mentally weak.
His swing's robotic, but like his personality is very like enjoyable. Mm-hmm. And it would have been cool to see someone win the Masters in their first major ever.
Yeah, that would have been sick. But I will reiterate your point. I love his attitude. I love his swing. It is kind of robotic, but it's like perfect robotic.
Pure.
So hammers pure. It. Mm-hmm. So pure. I love his attitude, and I love his pace of play. He is one of the fastest players out there. Just gets up, like decisive, pulls a club, knows his number, knows his shot, hits the ball and moves on, which is really nice. I love Max, but he is starting to get really, really slow, especially on the greens when he does his, and I think CBS was pretty good about not showing the whole routine, but he does the whole like aim point with his feet and like starts humping the line and feeling it out. And that's all fine, 'cause it's working. Obviously it's working, but I would love if professional golf at the highest levels anyway, could go to some sort of shot clock system where you have a certain amount of time to hit each shot. And then you get maybe 5 timeouts per round where you can request more time for that second shot on 11, for that shot on 12, when the wind's swirling, for a tough shot when you're in the trees or between clubs, whatever it may be, you get a set amount per round. You can take more time, because I don't like when guys take forever. And
how would you set it up? Would you do it as a shot clock, like as soon as they get to their ball, or as soon as like they,
that's the tough part, is when does the clock start? That's a really tough part, because you could walk slowly and your caddy could get there first, and then it really doesn't speed up things. I don't know.
I got an idea. What if the the standard bearers, the score bearer guys, implement them as referees? Like any other sport, have a ref and be like, hey, you're dragging your ass, you're gonna get a delay a game.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I think it sounds kind of crazy, but I don't know. I think that works. Like, it's,
I think it would have to be argument. It'd have to be less subjective than that.
Yeah, it can't be subjective. There has to be some subjectivity on when you start the clock. Mm. The thing is, you should get more time if you're the first guy to hit going to the tee box and getting to your ball in the fairway. Because the second guy will have more time to prepare while the first guy's hitting. So you should get a little more time. I don't know. The clock's got to start when player or caddy gets the ball, I think.
I think, just thinking about it, for me, I think I would start the clock as soon as the first player's ball came to rest. So as soon as that first player's ball comes to rest, you have X amount of time to hit your ball.
Okay, what about walking up the fairway though? Like you're the shortest drive in the group. Not a problem for you, Mike. You're never the shortest guy in the group. But so us three are playing. I dunk one out there, 270. I'm walking up to my ball. When does my clock start?
So I think I think if you're walking a little bit slower, I don't feel like that's the worst thing. But as soon as you get to your ball, that's when the first guy's clock starts. Yeah. And then the next two people, their clock starts as soon as the other person's
ball comes to rest.
Yeah.
I like that. I like that a lot. Cause Max and Bryson got told to hurry up on Saturday.
Yeah.
They were out of place. And those are two guys that do not play fast. Bryson takes a lot of time too.
Yeah.
So it would be fun
to see for sure.
When there's two slow guys in a group, it's no problem because they're both going to be slow and then they're both going to be put on the clock.
Yeah.
It is a problem when you get one fast guy with a slow guy in a group and the fast guy is making up for the slow guy. And it's not fair to the fast guy if the slow guy causes them to get out of position and then they both get put on the clock. Because then even if you play fast, when you're on the clock, you feel a little bit anxious.
So I got a question for you. Do you think that it was, and this is my stance on it, I think it was 100% on purpose that the Masters paired up Koepka with Harman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was so shady of them to do that.
Do you think they don't like Brooks?
I just don't think they like Liv.
Yeah.
They did not show a lot of Liv coverage today. No. I thought there were some good rounds out there and they didn't get,
I don't know. They showed Hatton a lot for not like threatening.
True. They could have shown Cam Smith a lot more.
That's fair. I thought it was better this year than last year. Last year it was like pretty clear that they were showing PGA guys over Liv. Like Phil Mickelson came in second and barely showed him at all.
Yeah.
that was pretty fucked. Like that was such a good story.
I can't remember who said it, but they were talking about how there were like at one point there was no Liv guys in the top six, but the next four guys or the next four guys in the top 10 were all Liv guys. Mm-hmm. And I think it just shows that regardless of what tour these guys are playing on, they're still like world class. Like they didn't lose their game like some people thought they would as soon as they took the money and didn't have to play for like winnings anymore. Those guys are still unbelievable.
Well, Bryson, I don't know. DJ kind of mailed it in. maybe he just had a bad week, but he just does not seem to care now.
Yeah, that's fair.
Bryson had a good point about like how much more he can prep and all that now. And he kind of did it in his Bryson way where he's like, I got to test out all this equipment now and all this stuff. But I think it's kind of fair for majors. Like they can gear up quite a bit more than the PGA guys having to play every single week.
Yeah. The other question I was going to ask you, so we talked about Ludwig a little bit. With his resume already being the number one am in the world and playing in a Ryder Cup already, playing very well in his first Ryder Cup, and now coming second in his first major, what's a fair line for the amount of majors that you think would be a good career for him?
He's 24. So let's say he can play competitively until he's 40. So 16 years times four majors, 64 majors, like 4.5.
Yeah, that's kind of where
his over under is 4.5.
That's a high over under.
That's a high.
Having
number.
Won any, but like he's got the game, dude.
He's got the game for sure. Yeah.
Is he just hot right now? Like he's won three times. I think I saw worldwide, internationally, and then once on the PGA. So I think that's like pretty bold to say, you know. I know he's
first ever major solo second at the Masters. How good is that?
I know, but 4.5 is a big.
That's
number.
A big line. I know.
How
that's,
many guys?
That's,
Brooks that's is the only one.
Brooks. That's Brooks. Yeah. That's like the only active player with more than that. So that's a big line. 3.5.
Yeah, 2.5, 3.5.
If it was 3.5, I'd probably take over.
Okay, then I think the line is 4.
Yeah.
And 4 is a push.
Yeah. Another very interesting thing from this week that was talked about a little bit, but I don't think it was talked about enough, is that the scientist, Bryson, had his irons 3D printed, which I don't even really understand how that works. But he 3D printed his irons. The USGA okayed them for the Masters, and he seemed to be playing quite well with them. Is this just another weird Bryson thing, Craig?
They sound like a cheat code, and I'm surprised they got okayed on such short notice, because the way it sounds to me is like it's got a bevel or whatever bulge. You want to call it, the bulge, like a driver, right?
Yeah.
So to me, it sounds like he's getting basically the idea would be, I think that he's getting less gear effect out of his irons or something, because I think that's the purpose of the driver having that, right? That's why a driver doesn't have a flat face. Could be totally wrong on this, or more gear effect, whatever is going to help the ball come back.
Yeah.
So whatever it is, I don't know science, but yeah, I just can't believe that's legal. That sounds so fucked up. Like, they've never made an iron like that. Bryson's like, okay, here you go. I'm going to do this. And they just give it a thumbs up on short notice.
How weird must it look? So I want to see what it looks like from the top line. Does it look like kind of a rounded face? Because that would fuck me up looking straight down at it, at an iron that's kind of got a bulge in the middle of it.
I'm guessing it's extremely subtle, right? Like how TaylorMade has twist face, and you can't actually tell.
And it looks straight. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gotta be. It seems sketchy. And this was a huge story. He obviously played round of the day on Thursday, 65. Yeah. Phenomenal golf. They USGA just approved it Monday. I don't know for how long he was pushing for the USGA to approve him, but to go from not playing those irons to playing those irons this week and shooting 65 in the first round, pretty crazy. And maybe we'll
crazy,
see more.
But like, if I gave you a test question and it wasn't even multiple choice, and it said, who on tour do you think brought 3D printed irons to the Masters?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure you're saying Bryson.
Yeah, 100%.
I will say, having your logo on your irons like that, it's pretty nasty.
Is it a Bryson logo or like a Team Live logo?
No, like a BD. Like, I think it's his logo.
Do you think he's been playing with these irons a lot? Like, probably not in Live events unless Live doesn't care about the USGA, which is.
Dude, I was gonna say, dude, Live does in Live. Do your clubs have to be USGA
conforming?
Approved?
Probably, but I wouldn't put it past them to be like, I don't care. Like, play them if you want.
Yeah.
Do you think, though, if he wasn't playing them in Live events, that he's been practicing with them a lot leading up to here? Because Live had an event last week, right? So it'd be pretty wild to just change after an event.
Yeah, true. Another interesting story from this week. Scotty came out yesterday, and a reporter asked him if his wife went into labor during the fourth round, would he quit the tournament and go fly out for the birth of his first son? Scotty says that he would have stopped playing. Do you guys buy that?
You go, Bray.
Well, he said that all week with a 4-shot lead on the back nine on Sunday. I thought there was absolutely zero chance. If he got a call on hole 12 that Meredith was going into labor, he would have finished out the Masters. Like, when it's that locked in.
Yeah.
If it was after the first or second round and he was leading, he probably would have left, but
I'll go one step further. If I had a wife who was going into labor with my child and I had a 4-shot lead in the Masters and she asked me to be there for the birth of my kid, I might be divorcing her.
I will guarantee this. Meredith had her legs crossed the entire day today. That she was not letting that baby out. She was pushing that thing back in at all costs.
Yeah. That was wild.
One of the more fun conversations that came up from this week, which I think the listeners, who most of our listeners, I would say, are probably in this handicap range. So we had a question that came across us, and we're going to just discuss it a little bit. If the first one is, if you were a 10 handicap and you got put at 100 yards on every hole, so 100 yards on the par threes, 100 yards on the par fours, 100 yards on the par fives, what would a 10 handicap shoot from there?
It was 100 yards out on every hole, right?
100 yards out on every hole. But I'll preface this by saying, I think we said either...
The holes aren't par threes. They're still par fours.
And it would have been on the Friday or the Saturday of this year's Masters.
Okay, a 10 handicap. At first, I thought they would like make the cut. There's no chance. I was thinking about a 10 handicap, and I'm thinking about some of the holes, and... They would probably, I think they make some birdies and they make a few pars, but their others would be out of this world. They would have so many others. Like 12 would be a harder hole almost from 100 yards. Like, it wouldn't be that much different. If they hit it in the back bunker, they're putting in the next one in the water. They're dropping, they're dumping it in the bunker. They're making like a 12 there. And
even
there's
on
a few holes where they do that.
Even on the par fives, like 2 and 8 would be fine, but having 100 yards in on 13 and 15 to those greens would not be easy.
No.
Yeah. They wouldn't make enough birdies. They wouldn't make that many birdies to start because the greens are so fucking hard, but they wouldn't make nearly enough to cancel out the doubles and the triples.
Yeah. I think our good friend John McCloddock actually said he thought that the 10 handicap would win the tournament. So shout out John.
John is not in touch with enough 10 handicap golfers. And I'm not far from a 10 handicap now. So I recently signed up for an Alberta golf event, and I had to like actually sign up for Golf Canada, and I put in a bunch of scores. I haven't broken par in like years, but I'm a 3.7 now index. But I think about my 10 handicap friends, some of them, their wedge games are really not good. Like that's some of them can hit the ball okay off the tee, whatever. You give them 100 yards, it's not like at Augusta, you got to be precise. And their leg putting, also not good. Their short games, also not good. Their bunker play, really bad for the most part.
Yeah.
They're 10 handicaps because they play courses where they can slap a drive out there, get it around the green, sometimes get up and down for par, but make a lot of bogeys. Getting it around the green at Augusta is not good enough. Like think about hole three. So I love Augusta for not having thick rough around the greens. The ball rolls all over the place, which is super, super fun to watch, but it's treacherous for high handicaps that need to hit nippy little pitch shots. There is no way you're getting balls.
They'd be going back and forth on three.
Yeah, you're going back and forth on three. Hole 15, hitting a wedge off the downslope to wherever the pin is. I don't care. Well, they shouldn't be aiming at the pin, any pin on 15. They should aim for the middle back right of the green there. But they are probably blading it across the green into the water long and then just going back and forth across 15 all day. Yeah.
And another point that I'll make about this is that Augusta is extremely hilly, and from 100 yards out, you are getting every side hill lie, every uphill lie, every downhill lie. And unless you grew up on courses like that, that is a very different thing than just like hitting off a flat surface or hitting off a mat. So,
and you're not used to putting on greens that are 14 on the stimp.
Yeah.
And are super sloped. Like your lag putting on your greens that are 9 at home, not good in the first place. Imagine having a putt from, I don't know, 50 feet on hole 5 with that big ass ridge in it. Like, good luck. Like, it makes guys on, like, in the Masters.
Guys on tour look dumb.
Yeah, exactly. Like, good luck, buddy.
I will say, at what point do you think at what handicap do you think it becomes, like, reasonable that with the same bet?
I think we didn't give a number. What do you think the 10 handicap shoots on, like, an average round from 100 yards at Augusta tournament conditions?
High 80-ish. No, I'd say 80-ish. No. Because they're going to make 90, some
like 90s like, high. No, 90s just, high from 100 yards.
That was my answer for our next question.
Yeah. 80-ish is what I thought.
80-ish is correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
So my argument, or not argument, but kind of argument, would be, I think kind of a two to a four, it's drastically different. Because I think there's a big difference between that handicap and a 10, obviously.
Yeah.
And I think that they could eliminate some mistakes with like a slightly better bunker play, short game. They would still probably make a few others, but I think a 2 handicap would be a pretty low score from 100 yards.
You could win the Masters from 100 yards as a 2 cap. Obviously, you're going to be super nervous. That's also a big factor. But you're not going to make a lot of twos, but you'll make a few twos. Yeah. And that's like big. You're going to make a lot of fours. You're just going to hit the green and two putt a lot. You're going to three putt a few times. You're going to make some threes though. You hit the green, you two putt. That's a birdie on a par four.
The skill difference between a low single digit and a 10 is actually like massive.
Huge.
Yeah.
Next question. Now this kind of applies to Bray and it applies to Craig with how well Craig is playing right now. But what would a 2 handicap shoot at Augusta on Friday? So one of the hardest days that we've ever seen at Augusta, baked greens, wind going crazy. What would a 2 handicap shoot from those championship tees?
I think breaking 100 would have been a tough feat for a 2 handicap. Like mid 90s would have been a good round. If you played really well, you could shoot in the mid 80s. If you broke 80, that would be like round of your life. That would be
I don't think that's happening.
Even feasible.
It's not possible, but that would have been like their equivalent of their like you shooting 59, Mike. Yeah. Like that would have been their like lights out would have been breaking 80. Yeah. So I think like 95 for a 2 handicap would have been a good score.
Yeah.
Craig? Yeah, they could be in the hundreds for sure. But I think they do break more 2 handicaps would break 100 than not.
I agree.
You don't play the course as it's like intended. You play kind of very safe. You just take big numbers out of play and you could dink it around and break 100 if you really, really wanted to. If you tried to get aggressive and like go for par, like try to hit the green on hole 5, which is a par 4 in 2, you bring a lot of big numbers into play doing that, or just any par 5 even. Yeah. If you play aggressively, you're going to shoot in the hundreds for sure. Yeah,
totally agree. So we've talked about the good things from the Masters this year. I just want to touch on a couple of the bad things. So who were you most disappointed by this Masters? I think the answer for us might be similar. But I just want to know, like, who did you expect to play well that really just didn't have a good week?
Okay. I'll list a few. So I mentioned him earlier, but Dustin Johnson, former Masters champ, kind of an asterisk. It was the COVID November Masters. Just like totally non-competitive, not even remotely close to the cut line. So that's one. Just scrolling through the leaderboard here. Justin Thomas didn't expect him to like threaten to win, but he'd been playing okay-ish this year. Had one of the biggest ejections to miss the cut.
Yeah.
Let me pull up his scorecard.
I'm glad you commented on the ejection, because that was incredible.
Yeah, hold on. Let me pull this up here. Justin Thomas, second round. He finished double on 15, double on 16, bogey on 17, double on 18 to shoot 79 and miss the cut by one shot.
Yeah.
I
drafted him in our Masters pool, and he was one of my low guys with 4 holes left on day 2. And he missed the cut.
Like, obviously, Friday Masters was one, like we mentioned, one of the toughest we've seen Augusta play. But to finish like that, to miss the cut, is one of the biggest ejections I've ever seen to miss the cut. I'm sure there's bigger, but in recent memory, that is crazy, crazy.
That's low-key heartbreaking for a guy who was struggling last year and then kind of is like figuring it out here and there and then kind of stringing together a decent week at the Masters, and then that happens.
Yeah. So I guess that's one of him and DJ, I guess.
Okay.
Throw Spieth in there.
You,
okay. Yeah. No. Sorry. I don't want to take everyone's. JT and DJ.
Craig, you can go next. Yeah.
All right.
Take mine for sure.
Every single year, Rory.
Yeah.
Every year. Like, I don't know why I get my hopes up. Adam's fucking shit talking me over text the entire time. Like, this guy just doesn't have it. He's so bad. All this
hashtag
stuff.
Adam was right.
I still think he's gonna get at least another major, if not multiple, by the end of his career. I don't know if it's going to be a Masters. Like, he's got fucking demons there, clearly. But, yeah. He needs redemption there so bad, and he's probably not going to get it at this point. I don't know. But I think Tiger did say he's like, Rory's going to get one.
Yeah, so Rory was going to be one of my picks, and I'll just touch on what I actually thought was one of the biggest non-stories for somebody who was playing for Rory. So he actually started off round one very, very well. He was 2 under through 12. 2 under through 12. And then he had the par 5 13th, which he parred. He birdied 14. And then he parred 15, parred 16, and bogeyed 17. So he had a chance to go really, really low on day one with two easy par fives left, and then Not the easiest finish, but still not a very difficult finish. And he played the last 6 holes at even par, where there's guys that are using those holes to really, really score. And then just in round two, as soon as the day started, he just didn't seem like he had it. And he shot 5 over 77, no birdies, and basically was out of the tournament just like that. So,
yeah. And he was playing with Scotty. So round one, yeah, you mentioned his kind of slow finish, whatever. He shot one under. Like, he was in the turn. Was it one under?
I'm not one under. Crazy. Yeah.
One under. So, like, he's still in the tournament, which in years past, he shot 76 in round one and was completely fucked. He was still in this tournament after round one.
Yeah.
But round two, like you mentioned, wind starts blowing. Scotty's hitting low, like piercing iron shots through the wind. And Rory's just hitting high, poofy ones that get taken into the water on 11. Like, the difference between them two is crazy far now. And Rory used to be that guy. Rory was the flusher that had all the shots that guys looked up to. Now he's playing with Scotty and being like, man, like, do I have these shots? I don't even know. And Rory used to always just send it to the moon and just like, he hit it so pure that it would go through the wind. When it's blowing that hard, you can't do that. Like,
do you think you can? Okay, so this is kind of a two-part question. Sorry, Brad, did I cut you off? Do you want to?
No, go ahead.
Okay, this is kind of a two-part question about Rory, and try to answer this kind of fast, but my first part is, do you guys think he made a mistake going away from kind of slinging that draw? And like, I think dialing it back a little was maybe smart, but he's kind of tried to go to a cut here and there, or like definitely has tried to go to a cut off the tee. And I feel like he was just so good at hitting those moon ball draws. But then part two is like, why do you think he, in his like last half of his career, his game just hasn't been like dominant, or, you know, it's still an unreal career, but why is it not dominant? Like, do you think he's battling his swing all the time? Do you think it's just wedging and putting? Like, what is it?
I think he's a terrible short iron player
with
his wedges. He still drives it really well. I think guys are that much better these days. Even since when he came into the PGA Tour, the talent level has just gotten better and better. Yeah. And I don't think we've seen it in majors where he's had chances to win, like the British against Cam Smith. He just doesn't. He doesn't make the putts when he has to.
Yeah.
I think
that's true.
One of the things is, he was hitting big, high slinging draws when he was younger. And I think one of the reasons why people have caught up to it, like, he's still one of the best, if not the best driver of the ball, not this week necessarily, but everyone is kind of closer because of the technology and the driver and the golf ball. Mm-hmm. And everyone pretty much for the most part hits cuts off the tees. Like, name a guy that hits only draws off the tees, maybe Bryson.
But does Ober kind of hit it right to left?
He hits it whatever he wants.
It's not crazy, but I think the technology and the driver just makes it so much easier to hit a like a hard fade that doesn't spin that much now. So that's probably why he doesn't hit the slinging draws now.
But
I think a lot of people have just kind of caught up to him or gotten way closer with the driving. And like Mike mentioned, he just occasionally from 120 to 140 will just hit a nuky boy wedge that just goes so far over the green. It's like, what the fuck are you doing, buddy?
He's let a couple get away from him, obviously the Open. Sorry, Mike, go ahead.
I really hope he wins another one. I think it'd be great for golf. I think it'd be great for him. And I think if he gets one more, he's going to get a couple more. I think he just needs to really, really break through. My favorite disappointment of the week, especially after his asinine comments on Thursday, is Wyndham Clark missing the cut with a 6-over round of 78 after being asked a random question by a media member and him saying, "In LIV Golf, they only play 54 holes, so I like my chances." Obviously referring to Bryson being in the lead after round one. But this guy's quickly becoming like a villain on tour.
Yeah, that's a tough scene. He was one over and then makes the LIV comment. I know a guy that caddies for someone on LIV, and he was like posting that that interview that Wyndham said after Wyndham missed the cut on his story. And I think like all the LIV guys were laughing about it and making jokes at him. That's a tough scene, especially for Wyndham's first major first Masters to make a comment like that about LIV is really tough. And then to not back it up by at least making the cut and threatening.
Yeah.
Really, really tough.
Hold on, Bray. Did you just say you know a guy who caddies on LIV?
Yep.
And you don't think of having him as a pod guest? Any
we will.
Any...
We will.
Oh
we
my
will,
God.
But we got to be a little nicer to LIV in the future and say we want.
I'm pro LIV. I've gone out and said that.
yeah,
I
but
think
you
it could
also
be way better.
You didn't watch a minute of LIV Miami.
Yeah, because
yeah,
they
well,
need to improve their product. But I think LIV could work. They just, we've talked about this. But yeah, it just, you know, I'd love to watch it. It's just boring.
Yeah, I agree. No, I'll reach out to him at some point here.
What was
Craig, you have any more disappointments from the week? I have one more, but
Rom for sure.
Yeah.
If somebody didn't say him, yeah, I don't know if that's I think he's been having an okay season on LIV and stuff, so I'm not going to blame that. Just, you know, it's tough to defend at Augusta. So yeah, that was, I didn't see him like blowing up. I thought if anything, he would be in contention. I wouldn't have like necessarily bet on him winning, but he obviously any single Masters pool was drafting him top three.
Yeah.
So to see him shoot like 11 over whatever he finished up was pretty wild.
He also complained about the wind on Friday and said it was like he thought they should have called it at some points during the round.
That should be an advantage for him, though, because he hits that low blistering cut with driver and it's just so steady that like the wind doesn't touch it.
I know. The comments were tough, but he can bitch about some things. And you know what gained me some respect? Xander had the total opposite comments, was like, this was fun. Like, I like playing in these conditions or something along those lines. I don't know exactly what he said. I don't have the quote up, but he battled through the wind, played a very good round. What did he shoot here? I don't know. This is bad podcasting. But anyway, like total opposite of what Rom was saying. And that, like, I like John Rom. He's fun, exciting, brings some fire and like some entertainment to the game. But complaining about conditions, don't love that. Like, have some fight.
Yeah, he's kind of always been like that, though. That's like the one side of him we kind of forgive because he's so likable in other senses.
Yeah.
But Xander is another guy where it's I'd be very happy when he finally breaks through and wins a major. Big Xander guy, especially after those comments. I actually didn't know he said that, but that's awesome. I think that's such a good attitude. And then real quick to touch on Wyndham, he could be the most likable guy if he just shut up. But like all these, I don't know what the stories are, but people say there's stories about him being kind of a prick. And then the piece on him during Full Swing could make him more likable, but then he just like he says comments where it's just so much easier to not say anything. I don't know, he's a guy who shoots himself in the foot quite a bit.
Let me read Xander's quote here. This was on Friday on the conditions. It was fair. If you hit a good shot, the fairways out here are right in front of you. So 13 and 15 were those holes you need to take advantage of. And they were still tough to birdie with just how the greens were bouncing. Overall, I thought the course played really fair. And that completely juxtaposed what Rom was saying. He said a couple times questioning myself why we were out there, especially when I got to 18 and saw the whole front of the green just full of sand. It's rolling a little bit different. And he goes on, whatever, whatever. It's again, just borderline saying that they should have even been out there. So two completely different attitudes. I'm sure that kind of reflected on how they're playing. Obviously, if you play better, you're going to have a better attitude toward the conditions. But I like guys that just kind of accept the conditions and battle through.
Yeah.
I will say, I bet Rom's attitude, he might not come out and say it, he probably won't, but I bet his attitude towards those comments kind of changes as he simmers down days after, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you can't really say the course was unfair. Certain times when it's rain and greens are puddling, I get that argument. It's not always like, oh, we're all playing the same course. It's like, no, sometimes it is unfair. But that day it was fucked for everybody.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
The last guy who we didn't mention at all that I think is actually going through a lot of struggles, either physically with their swing or mentally, is Hovland. We saw him kind of, he ejected as well. And I believe he pulled out of the signature event next week as well. It's tough to see because he's one of the most likable guys on tour. And at one point on 15, where he three putted from like 3 feet and just didn't even try to tap in his next putt. It was rough to watch.
Yeah, he ended up missing the cut by two, but that could have been like a real slap in the face to miss that one footer that he one-handed. Yeah. Not a good look at the Masters, especially.
So yeah. I'm wondering if I hate to speculate this stuff, but he's always so happy-go-lucky, and maybe it's like a technique thing or like his game first, and that's why he kind of looks like not himself, or if it's personal stuff. But if it is technique stuff, I wonder if he ends up giving Joe Mayo a call in a couple weeks or months, whatever it may be, and try to get that game back.
Yeah, because for me, when the Ryder Cup was on, he was probably I would say playing as a top three player in the world.
I think he was number one going into
He
that,
won the
right?
FedEx Cup. Like, yeah. He was good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he'll get it back. He's so fucking good. But
yeah.
And it's not like he's fallen that long or far or anything. So,
sorry, I know we're all over the place here, but jumping back to Rory, I know recently he was rumored and I think has been confirmed now that he's working with Butch Harmon. Do you think that kind of he's maybe going through some swing changes? I don't know what they might be, but when you're kind of going through some changes and then you play around in crazy wind, and Scotty is known for not being super technical on the golf course. Like, he plays golf and not golf swing necessarily. Like, he is in there fighting shots this way and that way. But when you're going through some sort of changes, is it extra hard to adapt to conditions?
It's very, very, I would say, hard. Very playing hard. Golf swing is already hard. But then when you add in wind or rain, or like especially wind, it's so much more difficult because you're basically you can make your stock swing when there's no wind pretty much all the time to an extent. You have to manipulate the club just like a little bit more. You're hitting those soft ones, so like you're not hitting certain positions. I'd be really curious what Butch is working on him with, because when Rory was in his prime, like the one thing that always glared out to me was when he was in his prime at like P3, like, so that's when he takes the club back kind of halfway, like his arms parallel to the ground. The club was really upright, like the shaft of the club was steeper. And then he, I think it was like 2019, I think it was when he won the Players, right? 2019, does that sound right? His club started getting very horizontal and like more laid off going back, and he was kind of starting to struggle a bit more there. So I'd be curious if we start to see him get it like more vertical again. It's probably not a big thing for him. Like, he still fucking hits it so good. Yeah. But I don't know. I'd just be interested.
Just to touch on what Bray said. So when you're going through swing changes as a very good player, you have bigger misses than you're used to. Mm-hmm. And when the conditions get really hard, especially when it's windy, those big misses are multiplied even more. And it feels like you can't really control what the ball is doing, which is the absolute worst feeling that you can have in a tournament.
Yeah. I just think, like, even without crazy conditions, say you're working on something and then you go play around and you get just different lies, and you knew with your previous swing, you knew how to adapt to ball above your feet, ball below your feet, into the wind, downwind, whatever. Even just a slight change, you don't know how it's going to react and what your miss will be. And obviously, like, controlling your misses is huge at Augusta, like missing on the right side, missing short, missing long on certain pins, certain holes. And then you just, get any conditions with some sort of change, it's just going to be exaggerated. So,
yeah, good point.
I will say, once in a while, I think it benefits a guy who's working on his swing to play, and pad, this kind of contradicts what we were saying, but I think sometimes it kind of gets them out of technique and they get like, really dialed into the shots, and they kind of surprise themselves. But I don't know. That's very rare, especially if you're actually committing to that swing change.
It wouldn't be the Masters without touching on the GOAT himself, Mr. Tiger Woods. I can't remember the exact number. Is it 25?
24 Masters? Consecutive.
24 consecutive cuts made at the Masters, which is just absurd, especially with how his body currently is. What were your guys' expectations for Tiger this week? Was it kind of how you thought it would go? Did he get you a little excited while he was playing well in round one? How'd you feel about his overall play?
He outperformed my expectations. I bet him to miss the cut, as I do every year, and I just continue to lose money doing that, as I should. Yeah, but I accidentally pulled up his shot tracker here. Oops, didn't mean to do that. But Yeah, he outperformed my expectations. He had a good start on Thursday, but then his round got stopped because it was delayed a little bit, and he had to come out early on Friday. And his back, the first couple holes, looked very, very tight. And I was like, oh boy, this like is not suiting up for a good Friday round for him in the conditions. But he battled his ass off and scrambled so well. He ended up finishing round two at 1 over par, which when he finished was like, okay, that's good. But then realizing how hard the golf course played on Friday, I was like, that was fucking great. Like he played a hell of a round on Friday to make the cut and get in at 1 over.
I thought his Friday round was incredible, to be honest. He wedged and putted it so good, like, or wedged around the greens. Like chipping was good, putting was good. And then just in those conditions to shoot 1 over, you were well ahead of the field. It was like obviously a shame what happened on the weekend, but the fact he's finishing that tournament was awesome. Mm-hmm. And then I think it was he hit a 3 wood or a 5 wood into 15. Mm-hmm. And Homa, I think, said something like, that was so sick. And it was just this flush high draw right at the green. Like, just like stuff like that. Like when Tiger hits it, you could put anyone else on it, and it's just not as impressive. You know what I mean? So like, I just love watching him. Hopefully he plays Valhalla all 4 rounds. And then hopefully he's got a few more Masters in him somehow.
So yeah, 82 on Saturday though. So he grinds his ass off, gets up and down from everywhere on Friday in the tough conditions. Saturday is still playing tough, still windy, but not nearly as tough as the Friday round. And he shoots 82 and doesn't look super happy, but continues to grind. Playing 4 rounds at Augusta when the hills are tough and it's windy, that's just like adding more stress on the body. That's got to be tough for him. And it doesn't look comfortable. But it's Tiger Woods, and I was up this morning watching him on featured groups. Like, I don't care. It's Tiger Woods. I watch all his golf. But yeah, kind of disappointing weekend, but he proved me wrong and made the cut, which is phenomenal, and finished all 4 rounds.
Yeah, you guys absolutely nailed it. I didn't have huge expectations for him, but the fact that he was able to make the cut and play as well as he did on Friday, and I don't think people understand just how it's not unlucky about what happened with the first round getting delayed and having to come back out in the morning. But for somebody whose back has been fused multiple times, somebody who struggles that much with their physical health, having to play those extra holes on the same day, it is very, very difficult.
Yeah. I thought it was good though that he didn't have a long break between rounds. He finished and then half an hour later he was on 1 tee. So just kind of right into it. But anytime, I know even Patrick Cantlay, who hasn't had the same, obviously no one has had the same back problems as Tiger, but Patrick Cantlay has early in his career has had some back problems. I know he struggles with early tee times and wakes up like 4 hours before his tee time. So if he plays at 7 in the morning, he's up at 3 just to get his body ready to play. So I know Tiger has to do the same thing. And that's got to be really hard physically and mentally to stay sharp through a tough like 6 hour round in the wind. On the hilly Augusta National.
100%. How you
physically walk that course on short sleep is enough, let alone, all the pain he's probably in.
And it just looked like you could tell, like Bray said, early morning Friday, he did not look the same. I think he hit a good drive down his first hole and he just flat out chunked the wedge, made a bad bogey. It looked painful for him. Mm-hmm. One of the very interesting things I just found out, don't know who told me this, but Colin Morikawa apparently switched putters 3 times in 3 days. Craig, can you just touch on that quickly?
Yeah, so my understanding was he was using the blade that he ended up using for the last 3 rounds on Wednesday or whatever Tuesday in the practice rounds. Then for the first round, he switched to the mallet, and I think he still shot 1 under. And then he decided to switch back to the blade, which is kind of psychotic. If there's one piece of golf equipment that gets switched among golfers on a dime, it's definitely the putter. And a lot of the time it kind of pays off because you're pretty intuitive and with what's working on the greens and what feels good, but still kind of psychotic to switch after a Thursday.
After a Thursday when you shot under par too. But I guess he missed some short putts that he wasn't thrilled about. He's missed short putts in the past though. Like Colin is not a... a putting guru by any means, but to switch and then threaten, like he had a very legit chance to win out of nowhere, dude. Like he has not been playing good golf this year. Yeah. And I wouldn't say Augusta suits his game that well. He doesn't hit it nearly as far as everyone. He obviously used to be and is kind of back in. Maybe this week he found something with his irons. Like he used to be phenomenal with his irons a few years ago when he won those two majors. Putting has been his shortfall.
And a big thing is that he hits a big cut off the tee, which
yeah.
Did you guys see the cut he hit on 13?
It was nasty.
That was sick.
Just right down the tree line, baby cut.
Shout out Scott Fawcett. Stick to your shot shape.
Yep. Do you guys, before we move on to another segment, do you guys have anything else you want to quickly touch on about the Masters?
Yeah, I'll talk about Jason Day. His like parachute pants on Thursday. Wind's whipping. He's standing over putts and his pants are just like flapping in the wind. How distracting would that be in the first place? Crazy that he's wearing them. But then Friday, he comes out in a sweater that says Melbourne Golf Championships or something. And it's just like big, obnoxious letters. Apparently got asked to take it off by Augusta membership, which is sick. Like, I love that Augusta's like, that's too egregious for you to wear on our property. Like, take it off, please.
Melbourne is so dumb for designing that for the Masters. If you've ever been to like a very high-end private club, it's literally on all their dress codes that you can't have giant logos. A lot of them will kind of ignore it, but the fact he's trying to do that at Augusta was insane.
So dumb or so smart though, because how much publicity did they get?
Yeah, I guess from a marketing standpoint, it's smart, but their shit is so fucking ugly that no one's looking at that and is saying, I'm going to buy that.
I went on their Twitter. They tweeted out, like, people obviously get mad at it, at what he's wearing, or get like, they have a take one way or the other. Usually people get mad at what he's wearing and they're like, ooh, like time for people to get mad again. And they tweet out his outfit and everyone just responds in the comments. I'm like, that's pretty smart marketing, actually. Like, I don't know who's going to wear that shit, but I'm sure there's a market out there for someone.
Honestly, I don't think in our lifetime we'll see someone wearing Melbourne at this
point. I was kind of vibing with his vest the second day.
I got one. Yep. Nikolai Højgaard was very much in it. I had him in another Masters pool, like a 1,700-1,800 people, like big pool with a big prize payout. And I had Scotty, Bryson, Nikolai. It was one of those where you like check the boxes, whatever. He was like keeping me up near the top, and he was leading
at one point.
Yeah. And then he just like threw up on himself the last couple of days. So yeah, I don't know too much about his game. Obviously, he's a twin. High-powered young guy like Åberg, yeah. Åberg, but yeah, don't know too much beyond that. He's a good player, obviously, but yeah, tough scene on the weekend.
Did you obviously with how he finished in the Masters, just kind of crumbling? You did not finish.
No, I did not. That pool with that, you need like the perfect lineup. Basically, like you got to pick out of the box, like the top guy. It's basically like playing the Millie Maker on DraftKings, Mike.
Yeah,
I know. Yeah. No, you need to hit like the absolute nuts. So if you don't have the exact lineup, you're not going to cash, or you're not going to cash big. You can min cash sometimes, but
totally. Yeah, I think that's all the stories from this year's Masters. Obviously, amazing week like always. A little bit of a disappointing finish, but still, Augusta looks as pure as ever. It was amazing seeing what Scotty did. But going to my favorite segment of the week, it is time for cancel culture. I have my favorite cancel culture of the year coming up, so I'm quite excited. I'm going to go to Mr. Braden Brown first, though.
All right, my cancel culture. And I've already canceled this guy once this year, but I am canceling Zach Johnson. He, after tapping in for triple on hole 12 in round two, I believe, looks back at the patrons who are clapping as they do. They're like 150 yards from the green on 12. They clap when people putt the ball in the hole. That's what they do, Zach. They're clapping. He looks at them and says, fuck off, pretty loudly. And this is a nice Christian man, if you've seen his his full swing episodes. This is a man of faith. And he's telling these nice patrons at Augusta National to fuck off. Not very cool, but I'm not canceling him for that. I'm canceling him for denying that he did that when it's on camera. And he got asked in an interview after, like, did you swear at the fans or something along those lines? I'm not sure. And he said, no. And if I did, I'm not going to deny it if it's on camera that I did. But like, I'm almost certain that I didn't do that. Like,
it was a terrible interview.
Yeah, it was so cringeworthy. This guy is just the cringe king. Like everything he does in Full Swing, everything he did at the Ryder Cup, Zach Johnson is just going down in, like, I don't know, the cancel for just being a brutal guy. Like, not a bad guy, but like just a cringe guy. Going down in the fringe guy, as Friday Beers would call it, Fringe Guy Hall of Fame. Canceling Zach Johnson for that.
I can't wait till you cancel him for a third time for something else. It's going to be so good.
You're definitely going to hit the over on that prop.
Yeah. I will say the funniest part about that interview was, didn't he say he didn't know there were patrons over there or something like that? Like he
said, obviously I can't hear the patrons.
Yeah. What a fucking moron.
Yeah. So this guy that I'm canceling actually tried to cancel me last week. Uh-oh. And that would be Mr. Craig Titt. So this week I'm canceling Craig, but I'm canceling him for an actual reason. He did one of the most egregious, like, disgusting, vile acts that I've ever seen at a pitch and putt course in my life. Okay. We are playing Kensington pitch and putt. Me, my brother Nick, and Craig, we're playing a little skins game. The greens are horrendous this time of year. They have punch marks everywhere. They're like ball marks everywhere. They're fuzzy. They're furry. They're bumping every single which way. It's just Plinko out there. Craig has a putt to win a skin on hole four from maybe 3 feet, and the guy fucking aim points it. He gets behind his ball, puts his putter, starts feeling it with his feet, takes about 30 seconds.
Did it go in?
No, it didn't.
I think it did.
I couldn't believe what I was seeing from you. Can you please comment on why you thought aimpoint would work on greens like that?
Okay, because pretty much every putt breaks some amount, and I'm blind as fuck. So I don't know. I stand over the line like every time. I didn't aimpoint. I'm not using my fingers. I don't do any of that, but I just feel the break a little.
It was egregious. And I called you out on it on the spot.
Nice. How did I putt that day, though?
So bad.
So bad.
I want to know how much each person won and lost.
Nick,
have we totaled
Nick,
it yet?
Nick won the most. Nick, I think, won 9 skins. I won 6. I won 6. Craig won 1.
Won
and then they were
on the first hole.
On the first hole, he won the first skin of the day and then didn't win the rest of the day. He also had a 2-shot lead going into the back 9, and he blew it by missing a bunch of putts, missing a bunch of greens. Claimed
3 putting at pitch and putt a lot.
Yeah, you should have aim pointed more putts, I guess.
Doesn't matter when you blow it 8 feet past the hole.
Me and Nick tied for low gross at 1 under at Ken's, which is okay this time of year with how bad the greens are. I think Craig was 1 or 2 over. But I can honestly say Craig maybe hit it the best out of the three of us, but it was just a disaster on the greens for him.
that was rough on the greens. And usually it's not that bad.
Yeah. Do you have anyone you want to cancel this week?
Okay. So I'm going to go kind of a different direction with it this week. I was ready to cancel Scotty's wife if she had a baby, but I'm going to praise her. So I was going to cancel her. You got to hold that kid in. If your husband's about to win the Masters for the second time, especially, like we said, first major of the year, and he's going to have a career year. But what a true warrior. Like, I think she duct taped that thing shut. That kid was not coming out today. And yeah, just all the praise in the world to, what's her name? Dolores or something?
She's got Meredith.
Meredith. Yeah. Well, I mean, pretty much the same thing. So yeah, Dolores, Olga, and Meredith, probably the three worst names in the human language. So
she's also not due until like end of April, beginning of May. So it was very, very unlikely
that
she was going to have the kid. It's not like she was.
Oh, I'm canceling her then. Like, oh, look at me. I want to be in the spotlight. I'm about to pop. You have like 3 weeks left, lady.
I really don't think that she said that. I think Scotty got asked and like,
dude,
Scotty
she was tweeting it out.
Okay. Okay. So you're not. You went from canceling her to not canceling her, and now we're back on canceling her.
We're canceling her. Yeah, I didn't realize she wasn't due till June.
She just seems like the sweetest, like, nice lady.
She's probably so nice. Yeah. And so is he, and I just canceled their unborn child.
Yeah. All right, boys. Another episode complete. Very happy to be here with you. I will say one more thing. There is a U.S. Open qualifier at the Vancouver Golf Club tomorrow.
Ooh.
I am ladies U.S. Open qualifier.
Oh,
fuck. One of my good friends is playing. Wishing her the best of luck. I'm expecting big things. Big, big things.
Who's playing? Say the name.
No.
Why?
Because I don't want to.
Oh, okay. Text me.
But yeah, another great episode of the Bounce Back Bogey podcast. Our first Masters Bounce Back Bogey podcast was very fun talking about it last week, covering it this week. I hope you all enjoy it, and we will see you next week.
See you guys next week. I've got the biggest Sunday scaries now, just watching golf for 4 straight days and like talking Masters, and now it's like,
back to work,
no majors for another couple of weeks. And
yeah,
but
PGA, shout out, new schedule. This time of year is unreal. Only a few weeks away. Valhalla, Rory last won there.
Yep.
Get hyped. Yeah,
it's going to be unbelievable. Right. And a signature event next week already. So
yeah,
that's too early. I don't like that. Like, we need a week off here.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, boys, that was a pleasure.
All right. See you guys.
See you guys next week. Talking on a dream. Like,